been a great morning so far, hasn't it? I love it. I love my church family. How many of you were here last week? Yeah. Did you guys absolutely enjoy Mark Barlow talking about restorative practices? So now, truth be told, how many of you were noticing maybe some of your shame responses this past week? Okay, I was. Y'all don't have to. I was. And I was noticing some of them in other people and looking at some of the interactions and some of the things, thinking, I'm wondering if they're having a reaction that I can be a little extra sensitive to. So we are continuing with our restorative justice series, and today we're going to be talking about resilience and how it goes hand in hand with what we talked about with restorative practices. So if you remember from last week, restorative practices are practical strategies to build strong, healthy relationships and community. And the aim is to develop community and to manage conflicts and tensions by repairing harm and restoring relationships. Now, I don't know about you, but if you've been around Crosspoint for a while, doesn't this sound like us? Doesn't it just sound like us? We talk so much about family and how we walk things as family. And I don't know about your family, but my family occasionally has some issues. We occasionally have some hiccups, and we want to walk that well. I want to make sure that I do what I can to repair harm and restore relationship. And this church is all about how we can build community with each other and out being part of the community. And because of that, see people reconciled to Jesus, right? So I think that this is what we are all about. So we're going to get started this week, much like we did last week. And I'm going to ask you to pair up, and we're going to do some pair sharing. And so if you remember from last week, or if you weren't here, basically you're going to find someone that you didn't come with, and that maybe isn't like your bestie at church. And I want you to introduce yourself, and on a scale of 1 to 5, how are you today? How you doing? And then share one concern you have and one person or thing that you're grateful for. Okay, so I'm just going to give you a few minutes. Go ahead and find somebody real quick to pair up with.
Circumstantially, but internally, I got a new job on Tuesday. No, Monday I got hired at a job that's literally less than 5 minutes away. It's funny because I was thinking about this. Job's a better job. I'd been without a job for like a month and a half. And I was
okay. Waiting. Okay, switch up if you haven't switched.
Really rad, and I got to like really testify. How are you?
I'm good. I'm about a 4.5.
Okay.
I'm doing good. Just kind of adjusting the busyness of life a little bit. And,
this one,
we'll have to, I'm going to have to go on the screen to wrap up.
I already know who you're going to.
I have a concern I have. Just when I hear graduation,
okay, come back to me here. So how many of you actually enjoy getting to find out how the people around you are doing and to be able to hear a concern? Those of you who were here last week, how many of you prayed for the person's concern all week long? I prayed for my person's concern all week long, several times a day, because it stood out. Sometimes we don't always take the time to hear those types of things. So I want to talk to you a little bit to get us started as we're going to go through some things that are more conceptual and then some things that are really tangible. This pair sharing is one of our things that are really quite tangible. And I want to tell you why we do it. So when I come up and I say, so how you doing? What's the answer that everybody gets? Doing good. Some of you who are like, you know, you're doing good. Some of you are like, fine. I'm fine. I'm tired. I'm good. Does it really tell you much of anything about how the totality of life is really going? It doesn't. But this gives some information. You know what? If I come up and you tell me that you're a two, that gives me some insight into how things are going. Right? That lets me know that maybe I need to stop and plant my feet and ask a few more questions and to see what's really going on with you. Right? And so it gives the opportunity over the long haul to be able to know how people are doing, to be able to maybe just even, you know, kind of flash a number. Mark Barlow likes to scale 1 to 5 because then in classrooms and stuff, you can just look around and students can just kind of give you, you know, on one hand, they can just kind of tell you how that they're doing. This gives the opportunity for people to share information. Well, I'm a 3 because, or to not share, I'm a 3. And you still get a gauge of where they are. And it still lets you know how to be able to start praying for them and how to be able to know what that they might need a little bit more from you. I would love to see this be our culture here. I would love to walk through the halls on Sunday mornings and people being like, hey, scale of 1 to 5, how are you? Scale of 1 to 5, how are you? It's incredibly restorative and it's incredibly resilient because we know nobody's a 5 all the time. Right? Anybody here, you're a 5 all the time. Nothing ever takes you to that 4.5. You are always, always, besides Kenzie Womack, is there anybody who is always a 5? We're not. And that's okay. It's okay that you're not a 5 all the time. But we can start admitting it. We can start realizing that we're not. We can start letting somebody else know that we're not. That we're not okay all the time. So I think it'd be great to see that be our culture. I think it'll help us build resilience. Resilience is the ability to recover from or adjust easily to misfortune or change. It's the capacity of a strained body to recover. Anybody ever had a strained body? Right? So it's been a couple years ago now. I was running a half marathon. And at probably about mile 3 of the half marathon, now we're just going to be real here for a minute, I stopped at the porta potty, and when I stepped out of the porta potty, I stepped down wrong, and I tweaked out my knee somehow. And it hurt like crazy. And I remember just trying to nurse that that wound, and as determined as I am, I was determined I started the half marathon, I was going to finish the half marathon. So I did, and it hurt the whole time. And having to try to figure out how to recover from that, you got to take some time sometimes, don't you? You've got to kind of tend to those types of strains and those types of injuries. And yet somehow we think that when our brain is injured or our emotions are hurt, that it's any less of the need to tend to and to care for. So as we talk about resilience today, we're going to talk about our brains a little bit, and we're going to recognize that things actually happen within our brains just like things actually happen within our bodies. And when things happen in our bodies, I praise God that we can pray. And I praise God that he's given us promises, that he's going to heal those things that happen. And he can, right? But we also have this whole field of medicine that can come along and can help us to recover as well. How many know that God uses doctors? He does. And it's important to understand how our body works to know how to help heal it. Well, it's important to understand how our brain works to help heal it. And yes, God can do it like that. But as we're going to talk about, sometimes the healing is in the process. We don't like that, but it's true. Sometimes the healing is in the process. How many of you know, maybe not you, your loved ones, when your loved ones are affected by something that happens, it tends to affect you, right? Now, if we're really going to be honest, when we're affected by something that happens, it affects those around us. If we don't process it well, if we don't deal well with it, we bring it home as much as we don't want to. I can come home from a good day and discover that once again, my old senile dog has peed on our floor. And I can, Kenzie's getting mad, I'm picking on her dog. And I can come home and I can be like, I need to clean this up again. Or I can come home and I can be like, girls, you've been home. Who didn't let the dog out? Who didn't come clean this up? And it has an impact based upon how my day has been. Am I the only one? We're impacted based upon how our days have been. It happens. Resilience is my ability to be able to say what has happened. I get to kind of reprocess. It's my ability to stand at the door and to say it's been a hard day. And I get to choose whether I take that through this door to my family or not. Resilience is my ability to say I'm not going to let those things that have happened to me before that have strained my heart and my emotions and my relationship and my brains affect me as I go forward. It goes hand in glove with being restorative. Because being restorative makes us more resilient. And being resilient makes us more restorative. It's this wonderful cycle as we begin to look at and pay attention to these types of things. For example, we learned last week about shame responses. We all have them. When we feel shame, we react a certain way. Resilience lets us deal with those shame reactions, deal with those things that have caused us shame, so that we don't have to react the same way. We don't have to have that same shame response. We don't have to attack somebody else. It's a whole lot easier to prevent that when we're resilient in the things that have happened to us. We talked about no one is a five all the time. Things happen to us. How many have had things happen to you? We all have. And what ends up happening is things happen and then time goes on. And things recover. And sometimes things transition to a new normal. They're not the same that they were. But all the while, our brain remembers. Our brain remembers what happened. Our brain remembers how we felt. Our brain remembers that initial response when something happened to us. Our brain remembers the struggles and the thought processes and the survival skills that it had to develop in order to be able to keep us alive in the midst of what happened. Our brain remembers. So let's talk a little bit about our brain. First, let's keep in mind, God made our brains, right? Just like he made our bodies, he made our brains to function certain ways. And you may not have known this, but you all in your brain, you have a hippocampus. That's like this filing cabinet in your brain. And it takes the things that have happened to you in the midst of the day, and it takes it and it files it away in this filing cabinet while you're in REM sleep at night. And this This is an extraordinary filing cabinet. This filing cabinet, it is set to where you can recall it based upon the events. You can recall it based upon the categories, who you were with, when it happened. All of these types of things, you can recall it that way. And it gets filed away nice and neat. I like to think of the hippocampus like my husband, Kurt. You can ask Kurt for anything, and it is neatly filed. He's got it exactly somewhere. He's always calm. It's always well organized. He can pull out what he needs to pull out, when he needs to pull out. And he has this uncanny habit of not going back to things he doesn't need to go back to. It's just filed. It's nicely filed. It's organized. You can talk about it well because it's calm and it's organized. And so it's this verbally accessible. It's wonderful. But you also have an amygdala. And an amygdala is like the alarm system in your brain. And when things happen to you, your alarm system starts going off. And this is right by your fight, flight, freeze, surrender, all of those responses that I'm going to keep you safe responses. This is your amygdala's job. When things happen in that part of your brain, they are unorganized, they are chaotic, they're not categorized. Sometimes you can't even put into words what is going on. Now, just like I told you that my husband is like the hippocampus, I tend to be more like the amygdala. Now listen, the amygdala is important. This is what keeps you safe. This is what keeps you okay in the midst of a crisis. It keeps your heart beating and it keeps your lungs filling with air. You want me around in a crisis. I really am quite good in a crisis. I do what the amygdala does. It shuts down everything that's not necessary, that's not essential, and it takes all of the supplies and all of the energy and everything that's needed to those parts of your body that are needed to keep you alive. How many are thankful for your amygdala, right? It's wonderful, and I'm like that. I'm really good in a crisis. Unfortunately, the aftermath of the crisis, everything is just a mess. It's just a mess, right? It's not filed neatly. The hippocampus has been over here like Kurt, like, let's take this and file it here, and let's take this in your brain. And the amygdala is like, wow! What are we going to do if that happens again? Let's make a plan. Let's figure out what we're going to do if that happens again. Let's make sure that we've got foresight and that we know and we don't see it coming before it. You know, we can see it coming before it comes. The amygdala is a mess. Nothing gets filed right. And those memories that aren't filed calmly and when they're time tagged and they're tucked away as an event that happened, but they're all lit up with your amygdala. Those memories, you don't always get control over when they come back. They become your triggers. When that alarm system goes off, everything functions on survival. That's it, survival. Your frontal cortex and your hippocampus and all of the things responsible for your critical thinking skills goes offline. And it's all just about keeping your heart beating and keeping your lungs breathing and keeping you alive, which is important, but it's a hard spot for good life skills to grow, right? We grow amazing survival skills in that. And studies have shown kids that have their amygdalas going off all the time, man, their survival skills are off the charts. But their life skills and their communication skills suffer horrifically because it's always out of the amygdala. We don't get this chance to file things and to process things correctly. So what makes that alarm system go off in our brains? Some of them are things that you would think about. Some of them are the traumas that you would think of that could make us wonder if we're safe or not. Threats, If you witness extreme situations, I think about my police officers who are on calls when there's car accidents and children die. Those types of things. They witness extreme situations or they see things happening to people around them. But look at what else causes our amygdala to go off. Betrayal. Do you know that your body can have the exact same response and your brain the exact same type of response to feeling betrayed as it does for our combat veterans over that are coming back from war? Our police officers, our body can respond the same way when we're betrayed. When we have concern about our basic needs being met. We feel like a loss of security. You know, we do that offering declaration every Sunday. And I've discovered it's really easy to do when you're pretty confident in your paychecks. If I mention my husband's a federal employee, we're not so confident in that paycheck right about now. So when it comes time thinking about checks in the mail and finding money, I'm all about it, right? Those types of things, those concerns for our basic needs being met, a loss of security, powerlessness. How many of you have ever been in a situation where you felt powerless, right? Our bodies can have this type of a response to them. Look at this one, feelings of guilt or shame. All of those trigger us the way that you would think of typical traumas triggering you. Your amygdala goes all kinds of crazy, and it creates all kinds of fragmented memories. And in the midst of those fragmented memories that are uncategorized and can come back to you at any moment, and you have little control over the retrieval of them, we get triggered. And it feels like maybe it could happen again. How do we stay safe? We need both sides of our brain, right? My amazing, in our early years of marriage, probably even before when we were dating, here's how it would play out. My husband's pro-hippocampus and me pro-amygdala, there'd be a spider on the side of the wall. Anybody not particularly fond of spiders? I am not fond of spiders. So me and my amygdala, when I see that spider, what I am intending when I scream spider is somebody needs to jump up and kill that thing now. It needs to happen, or set it on fire. I'm okay with that too. It needs to happen now. So here's Kurt in the midst of, there's a spider. Oh yes, there's a spider. Okay. Is there a tissue? Use your shoe, it's huge! Let me see what angle. Let me pull back from the filing cabinet of math days. What? And by the time he gets that thing, guess what? It falls down the wall alive anyways. And I'm now over here. Now the hippocampus is really going crazy because now, or the amygdala, because now I have to figure out how we can move. And can we afford an exterminator? And he's just like, it's not on the wall anymore. Threat neutralized, right? No, no. We need both. We need both working healthy for us to be healthy. The problem is all these fragmented memories, they stay and they come back at times we don't want to think about them and they affect our actions in ways we don't want them to because they haven't communicated over here to the hippocampus to get filed the way that we're supposed to. So before we go on with this, I need you to understand that there are some memories that are so impactful in your brain that you need a little bit of help transferring it over. And we're thrilled that there's some amazing tools to be able to do that. And so if you have some of those that are just really, really intense, let me know. We can refer and we can make sure that you understand some of those treatments that are available. But I gotta tell you, I'm convinced that some of those memories that are just hanging out there, that are fragmented, that are triggering us, it's because we haven't chosen to process them well. And we can. So those ones that I think we can process and move over, those are the memories we're talking about today, okay? Those fragmented memories, they're hard to process. So what do? We try to avoid them. We try to suppress them. We try to not think about them, right? So don't think about a pink elephant. Stop it. Stop. Don't think about the pink elephant. It's almost impossible, but that's what we do. We have these things that have happened, and we say, I'm just not going to think about it. Or, you know, some of us, we tuck it into some nice little thing that we think covers it. Maybe it's even a scripture, and we just leave it there in our amygdala, wrapped in something, but not really processing what that looks like and what happened. We think to ourselves, we won't think about it. And the harder you try not to think about it, the more you think about it. There's hope. Yes, this is the way our brains work, but there's hope. The impact of trauma that we've been talking about, it's absolutely natural, but resilience is biblical. And we get to go for resilience. Resilience is supernatural, and we get to walk supernatural. Those things that have affected us and affected us and affected us, we actually can say, yep, no more. I refuse to let that thing that happens dictate my behavior now and ever again. Romans 8:28, and we know that all things work together for good to those that are called, who love God and are called according to purpose. It does not say all things are good. It says that it works together for good. That's resilience. John 10:10, I have come that they may have life and have it more abundantly. That's not survival skills. That's thriving skills. That's a thought process that lines up with the kingdom of heaven and says, I can overcome. I can see this, just like we sang, from the place of victory. Yet in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. More than conquerors. So how do we do it? It's this amazing cycle. Resilience not only requires, but it reproduces personal responsibility, authentic relationships, and kingdom realignment. Resilience is a symptom of being healthy, and it also promotes health. It promotes spiritual, emotional, and physical health. And we foster resilience in our lives by focusing on taking personal responsibility for ourselves, cultivating authentic relationships, and engaging in kingdom realignment. They all work together and flow. As you enhance one, you enhance the others. Personal responsibility. I'm going to give you a couple of truths about each one, okay? You can cultivate excuses or growth, but not both. If you're going to choose to excuse your behavior, I do this because this happened to me back then, you will not grow. I'm not going to engage in authentic relationships because I was betrayed. So since the betrayal happened to me, I'm excusing away my lack now because of something that happened to me. You won't grow. We'll just allow ourselves to be victimized by what happened to us or what we did back then, and we won't change and we won't grow because we continue to excuse it away. That's not to say that there's not a valid reason for why we think the way that we think. There are. If you've been victimized, if you've been abused, if you've been mistreated, your amygdala is doing just what it's supposed to do, to be on alert that it doesn't happen again. But our spirit man comes in and says, I'm going to walk healthier. Our spirit man comes in and says, I need to reprocess that memory and what happened so that in this moment I can be whole and I can be healthy, so my relationships can be whole and can be healthy. Deciding that you're not going to take personal responsibility but you're going to give excuses will affect your relationships. We're going to look through the midst of this at the life of Joseph. I think most of you probably know about the life of Joseph. Starts off with his dad playing favorites, and Joseph was the favorite. And so brothers got mad because they saw this. And they probably have some trauma of their own from what their life looked like leading up to the point in time when Joseph had had a dream and shared the dream with the brothers, and the dream talked about his sheaf rising up and the ones that represented the siblings and the family bowing down to him. And the brothers interpreted that through the filters of their own issues. They had lived a life feeling like they weren't loved as much as the brothers or as Joseph. They weren't valued the same as Joseph. Maybe some of them began to think, I'm not as good. And instead of dealing with any issues, they made Joseph the target. They made Joseph the trigger. So now when Joseph comes, they get all lit up. Their amygdala is all kinds of lit up that there's a problem. And instead of taking any responsibility, they take it out on Joseph. It's interesting, the dream that Joseph had probably from a neutral standpoint could have been interpreted a number of different ways. End of the story. Spoiler alert. It turned out that that dream meant that Joseph was going to rise up to a place where he could literally save his siblings. It wasn't nearly as much about ruling over them as it was saving them. Obviously, there was another interpretation. But when we interpret things through our wounds and we interpret things through our injury, we come to these conclusions quick and we act on them. And it looks like it has to be this way because we have filters that are affected by our triggers and we don't stop and think, is there another perspective? We have to be willing to take responsibility for our own triggers and our own filters. And we have to be willing to say, guess what? I'm feeling a little insecure right now in this moment. Maybe it has more to do with me than the person who just walked into the room. We have to take personal responsibility. They could have interpreted that dream perhaps a different way, but instead, they got so upset that they decided to neutralize the threat, and they decided that they were going to kill Joseph. And one sibling was like, no, don't do it. Just throw him, and he ends up being sold into slavery, and it's a mess. Because the brothers interpreted what was going on through their own filters. Can you take responsibility for your own filters? Do you know what they are? That thing that your spouse does that drives you nuts? Maybe it drives you nuts not because of them, but because you're triggered. There's something going on in your brain that you need to reprocess. Can you take personal responsibility? Do away with excuses. There is no excuse good enough to prevent us from growing in the kingdom. There's no excuse good enough that justifies us not growing more and more and more into the image of Christ. I can guarantee you, Jesus had his hippocampus and his amygdala working perfectly in sync with each other. And that's where we can be. No excuse. And the value that you think you get of not having to face something is not worth stopping to growing in the kingdom. Look at the areas where you're giving the most excuses in your life and figure out why. What is it hitting? What memory needs to be reprocessed? What things that have happened to you? You know, when things happen and we begin to look at life and to do things differently, from trauma, from betrayal, we take these things that become beliefs in our minds. Maybe things like people don't love me as much, people won't take care of me, I'm not really safe, everything can change in an instant. My Jehovah Jireh really isn't, it's the government giving my husband a paycheck. We can take all these things and we begin to develop behavior based upon those beliefs. And those behaviors actually form neural pathways in our brain. And it's so easy to get on that pathway and just go from A to Z and come to your conclusion. But the beauty is we can change those neural pathways. We can do this differently. We can have different responses. We can reprocess that memory, and we'll get to that in just a minute, the how of that a little bit more. But where you have the greatest excuses decide you're done. That that's going to be the area in 2019 of your greatest growth. That's how you stop going around the same mountain. That's how you cross over, right, from one side to the other. That's how you get freedom. Personal responsibility, truth number two. You trigger you. No one else triggers you. We learned about how the brain works, right? When you get triggered, it is your brain triggering you. Don't blame somebody else for pushing your buttons. You trigger you. Biology tells you that. Your brain triggers you. So if you're getting triggered, don't blame them. Don't respond like it's their problem. It's not. Be mindful of your triggers. And when you start feeling triggered, remember it's your brain doing it. You need to stop. Just stop. Mark talked to us last week about just taking some big, deep breaths. Just walking away. Just shutting up for a minute and walking away. Can you do that when you start feeling yourself being triggered? You start feeling your heart racing a little bit more and your palms getting a little bit sweaty and you're getting a little fired up and you can tell it. Just stop. You may even be able to say, I'm really sorry. Like, I need to take a moment and just kind of process what just happened on my own for a second. Can you just give me a minute? Here's a really good truth. You ready for this one? Relationship 101. You cannot determine people's intention by their actions. Intention cannot always be concluded from actions. Because you don't know what has just happened to them. You know that they respond, but maybe their response is totally different. Mark talked about this last week when he was talking about driving, right? And somebody cutting him off, and maybe the initial response is getting ticked and then being like, well, I don't know, maybe his wife's in the car on the way to a hospital. Maybe something else has happened. Maybe, you know. So stop thinking that we can determine everybody's intentions by their actions. How many of you want your intentions always determined based upon your actions? When I respond in a way that's unloving, but I'm responding that way from a place of being scared or being hurt, I don't want the person to think that I'm unloving. I want some grace to know that I'm walking through something, that I'm scared, that I'm hurt, that it was a bad day, that I'm trying to process through. We can give each other that grace. But I have to remember that if I'm triggered, it's on me. It's my brain, not them. What would have happened if Joseph's brothers had taken a moment and reprocessed? You know what? Maybe that dream means something different. Have you guys ever read a text or an email and instantly got mad? And then you reread it the next day and you're like, Oh, maybe that didn't say what I thought it said the first time I read it. It used to frustrate me when that would happen. I'd get an email and I'm like, and I'd send it to my husband with my vent. He wasn't the one that sent the email. And I'd send it to him with my vent. And he would email back, and you know what? The nerve of this guy with this wonderful hippocampus. The nerve was, oh gosh, honey, I didn't even see that in there. I don't see what you're seeing. What? It's right here. He's like, that's not what it says. I saw it through my own filters. And you know you do it too. I need to recognize my filters. I need to be like, nope, I'm going to look at this differently. Joseph's brothers should have taken a moment and looked at it differently. Recognize there's different perspectives. It could have meant something different. If you're triggered, it's on you. This is probably a sentence you've never heard in church before. Don't alarm the amygdala. I feel like we should all say that together. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Don't alarm the amygdala. None of my children said it. This has to do with how we treat other people. This has to do with how we treat other people. While I need to be responsible and take personal responsibility for my own triggers, I need to be sensitive to other people's triggers. If Joseph had been sensitive to his brother's triggers, maybe he would have reworded his story about his dream. Maybe he would have chosen to not share it. We can be sensitive. This doesn't take away somebody's personal responsibility, but it shows love. It gives grace. I can be sensitive to other people's amygdala and not alarm their amygdala. Parents, when we get mad at our kids and we go and we stand over them and we're like, "What are you doing? Calm down." We are totally triggering a trauma response inside of them. Now they are all lit up. Their brains are all lit up. Their amygdala is going crazy. They're trying to figure out how they stay safe and how they get out of this situation. And the hippocampus is all shut down. And the frontal cortex isn't doing what it's doing. And they've got hormones and adrenaline flowing through their bodies. And they're all shook up. And the very next thing we do is tell them to calm down. Or they respond and we're like, "You need to speak respectfully to me." They can't. You've alarmed their amygdala. They are in fight or flight. And at that moment, you are not friend. You are foe. And you've done this to them. And then you want to have this nice, sweet conversation with them. Are you recording this? Apparently, over the years, I've alarmed my children's amygdala. They might have alarmed mine from time to time, too. If the point of a conversation with your children or your boss or your employees or your spouse or your friend or anyone is to actually be able to communicate, put them in the best position that they can be to respond well. Don't traumatize them and then expect their frontal cortex to be able to speak and to be able to process things clearly. Don't do that to other people. Take responsibility. If you know that somebody is working through some insecurities, have grace with them. This does not mean we don't confront issues. This is not saying, "Oh, I'm going to give them an excuse to not change. Oh, I'm going to understand what they've been through, and so I'm just not going to say anything, the fact that they were a jerk to me or they've been a jerk to somebody else." This isn't about not saying something. This is about being careful how you say it. This is about coming in a place of love and saying, "I want to put you in the best possible position to hear this conversation. So I'm not going to trigger you and then try to have a sweet conversation with you." You can still say what needs to be said. We've got a workshop coming up on the 26th that will go into more details about all of this and give some of the specifics, some specific tools on how you can start some of those conversations without alarming their amygdala. Y'all can say that again if you want to. Okay. So now that we've taken personal responsibility, now that we've been willing to look back and to see that our behavior may be based upon some of those fragmented memories of things that had happened in our past, but we want to be able to go forward. So we're taking personal responsibility to reprocess the things that have happened to us, to allow different truths to come into play, and hopefully transfer those fragmented memories of our amygdala over to nicely stored files in our hippocampus. We need authentic relationships. We need that, on a scale of 1 to 5, an honest answer. This is something that I try, I've tried a little test with. I have some people in my life where I specifically said, scale of 1 to, I did 1 to 10, but I like 1 to 5. And if I'm 8, 9, or 10, I'm okay. If you start hearing 7s, like, there's some follow-up questions I need you to ask. If I'm at a 7 all the time, chances are I'm believing something that I shouldn't be believing. So ask me what's going on. What thoughts are you thinking most? Is there a thought that's just right there in your brain that you're thinking about a lot? Do you have people in your life that can ask you that question? Do you have people where you'd be honest with the answer? I'm thinking that it's really sad that this happened to me. I'm thinking that because this happened, it means this. Sometimes we have these thoughts that are here in our head, and for some reason, we're afraid to get them outside of our head to fill the atmosphere to really be able to deal with it. Have you ever thought something, and as soon as you said it, you're like, oh, now I have the answer. Oh, now I see it. It's like instead of it being hidden back here, you brought it out for inspection. You're like, oh, that's all it is? Or it's, that's huge. But now I can see that it's tied to this thing over here. And I can deal with this to help be able to deal with this. When it stays in here, it's really hard. It's really hard to be able to process. It's really hard to be able to explore. We need it out. We need to be able to look at it. I think about Moses and Aaron and Hur, right? When they went up and there was a battle that was being fought, and Aaron and Hur had to be able to hold up Moses' hands when he got tired, which means that they had to be able to see his weakness. Do you let people see your weaknesses? Are you okay with seeing other people's weaknesses? Nobody's a 5 all the time. Are you okay with the people that you think are 5 all the time being like, I'm just not today. Bad day, bad week, rough year. Not okay in this area. We have to be okay. Authentic relationships say that I can see your strengths and I can see your weaknesses and I can be okay with that. And it means you can ask me the hard questions and I'm okay with you knowing that I have issues. I'm okay with you knowing what my filters are. And when you come back and you say, gosh, you know what? Maybe you're kind of seeing that through this filter because of this. I'm not going to get triggered. I'm going to be like, yes, I've been working on that. I might say it through gratitude. Yes, I've been working on that. We have to have those authentic relationships. Joseph, part of the reason he got where he got was because he was willing to speak truth and say the good things and the bad things, right? When he's in prison and there's a chief cupbearer that had a dream and a chief baker that had a dream, and it was good news for the cupbearer and bad news for the cake baker or the chief baker. And Joseph told both dreams and the interpretation of both dreams, the good news and the bad news. I don't think he would have been put to the level that he was if he wasn't willing to say the hard things. But I can guarantee you when he was giving the interpretation of the dream to the chief baker and it was not a good interpretation, that he wasn't like, oh yeah, so this is what's going to happen to you. Bummed to be you, that there was compassion. There was restorative practices being used in that conversation. Authentic relationships means people have to see our strengths and our weaknesses. We have to be open to people telling us our strengths and our weaknesses. And take someone along for the ride. Let them see your strengths and your weaknesses. Okay. Forgiveness must be a core value. Joseph's life showed the resiliency and the restorative nature of what we're talking about here today. Sold into slavery by his brothers. And at one point in his story, in Genesis 41, verse 50, he talks about, the scripture talks about how that before the famine came, so before everything was restored, before the famine came, he had 2 sons. And he named them names that mean, for the first one, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. And for the second one, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. He hadn't seen the fulfillment of everything yet. And he's declaring over his kids, I forgot the hardship. And even when I was afflicted, God's made me fruitful in this land. Forgiveness is not only a command that God gives us, but heads up, with most commands that God gives us, it's for our own good. I can't think of any commands that he gives us that all it does is blesses him and doesn't do us any good. Forgiveness must be a core value in resiliency. Because remember we talked about not thinking about the pink elephant, not thinking about those trauma memories? Well, when you don't forgive and you get triggered all the time, guess what you're always thinking about? What the person did to you, what happened. You keep thinking about that pink elephant. Forgiveness helps neutralize that. Genesis 43, verse 30. This is when restoration is happening. Then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brothers, and he sought a place to weep, and he entered his chamber and wept there. There is forgiveness. It was a core value, and there was forgiveness. And that forgiveness brings freedom. Okay. Has anybody ever felt like you've forgiven somebody and then something happened and you're like, I must not have forgiven him? You really honestly felt like you forgave that person. You really, like you honestly in your heart, you really, and in walking it with the Father, you really believed that you forgave that person. Okay, here's truth. The existence of triggers does not negate the existence of forgiveness. We're dealing with different systems. You've got your spirit man that is walking in wholeness and has forgiven that person, but your brain may still remember and be triggered by the events of what happened. I have been betrayed by people that I know I have forgiven, and yet something will happen. It'll take me right back to that memory. That's not necessarily a lack of forgiveness. It's the fact that my amygdala still has these memories that are out there that are harming me. And the devil loves to come and to say, see, you didn't really forgive. See, you didn't really forgive. See, there's still something between you and that person. Restoration hasn't happened. There's still something there. Just because you're triggered does not mean you haven't walked in forgiveness. It means there's some processing and some work that you need to do on your end. Don't let the devil lie to you on that one. Now, if you really haven't forgiven, you need to forgive, right? I want to give you an example of this. You know, they talk about something called phantom pains, when somebody has had a part of their body amputated. And so maybe they've had their right, I'll make sure I'm getting my left and my right correct, maybe they've had their right leg amputated. And yet, for some reason, they still feel pain below the knee or in the knee. It's not even there, but they feel it. Why? Because the brain is still processing like that part is still there. Those phantom pains are such a great example of what happens to us. The wound may be gone because we've forgiven, but our brain still sees it as a potential threat. And we need to work through that thought processes of the potential threat. The existence of triggers does not negate the existence of forgiveness. The lack of forgiveness does enhance the existence of triggers. So we don't get out of truly forgiving. And we've talked about this. We will be triggered if we don't walk in forgiveness. Okay, we're almost done. Authentic relationships, truth number three. Unhealth and health don't always do well together in a relationship. How many of you have ever walked healthy in an area and tried to be in relationship with someone who's not walking healthy? Health and unhealth do not get along sometimes. And I've had people in my life where I have gone and I've prayed and I was going to be restorative and I was going to practice all of the restorative practices and I went to just see if steps could be made to restore some relationships, and every bit of my health clashed with every bit of their unhealth and it did not go well. And thank goodness in that moment all I heard was Mark Barlow saying, It's the process that's restorative, not the outcome. My process was restorative. The outcome, not so much. But I did leave that experience where I would have been hugely traumatized and my amygdala would have been going all kinds of crazy had I approached it and had that same outcome without a restorative process. The restorative process allowed me to very tangibly take those things that were lit up and say, no, no, no. Here's truth and here's how it gets filed. And file it in the hippocampus to where I remember what happened, and it's sad, but I am not all kinds of triggered and traumatized by it. Does that make sense? Sometimes relationships aren't going to be this restored the way that you want them to be. An authentic relationship says, okay, I'm going to be okay with that. I've come to believe that there's some relationships where honor looks like deciding you're not going to try to control and press your way into a situation. I've shared some hiccups and some issues in my relationship with my mom in the past, and I get asked by people who are walking and navigating hard things with parents, I get asked, well, you're supposed to honor. Yes, I'm supposed to honor. And I'm choosing to honor by not controlling. I'm choosing to honor to say, as you wish, and then me be okay. Honor doesn't necessarily mean everything's restored, because restorative is the process, not the outcome. And I refuse to let their unhealth cause me to be unhealthy, because nothing good comes from both of us being unhealthy, right? So that area of unhealth, I'm not going to let that come over on me. I need to recognize sometimes they don't always go together. Okay. So here's the bottom line. At our workshop, we'll go through more of the how on some of this. Genesis 45, verse 4. So Joseph said to his brothers, come near to me, please. And they came near. And he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all of the land of Egypt. This is resilience at its best. To recognize that those things that have happened to you, they're not okay. You shouldn't have been treated that way. It shouldn't have gone down that way. But their power over you can stop now. Some of you believe that. Their power over you can stop now. You can decide now, I'm going to think different thoughts. I'm going to take those fragmented things and I'm going to take them out of my head and I'm going to expose them and I'm going to be like, that's a lie. What's the truth? That's a lie. What's the truth? That's a lie. What's the truth? And I'm going to let truth envelop these things and not just leave it with my amygdala all lit up. I'm going to say, okay, now let's go file it. Jesus, help me file this well. The truth is, I was not abandoned because you've loved me. The truth is, I've been accepted way more than I've ever been rejected. The truth is that you're the one that keeps me safe anyways, not anybody else. The truth is, you are my provider. The truth is, you are my healer. The truth is, I can see this from the place of victory, and I don't have to keep going back and letting my amygdala take me back to all of those things that have happened before. Will you take those triggers and wrap them in truth? Take them and wrap them in truth so that they can be put back where they're supposed to in the filing cabinet, like Joseph. oh, no, 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 I can look at it that I've had this horrible life. I was sold into slavery. I was betrayed. I was this. My own family betrayed me and didn't believe in me and blah, blah, blah. Or wrap them in truth. You know what, God, you used everything that has happened to me. And now look at the opportunities you've given me to be restored and to be resilient and to be able to provide and save my brothers. Do you have memories? Do you have triggers that you need to wrap with truth? Just like I believe that doctors can use medicine and surgeries to heal, I believe God can say, and you're healed. And you're healed. Just like I know that therapists and counselors and things like EMDR that specifically deal with those hard trauma memories and intense issues, I believe that they're there, just like doctors. But I also believe God can say, oh, okay, let's take that, let's wrap it in truth, and let's do that here this morning. Anybody have a few memories you'd like to be wrapped in truth, a few triggers you'd like to be wrapped in truth this morning? Why don't you close your eyes? We are almost done. Father, I thank you that you've taken us a little bit on a journey today that shows us the incredible ways in which you made our brains. God, that you made our brains to keep us safe. But it's your desire that we have the mind of Christ. It's your desire that things are filed the way that they need to be filed so that we're not triggered, so we put ourselves in the best position to behave the way we should and to show love the way that we should and to be able to respond to things that happen versus to get mad and triggered and angry and react to them. Father, I know that there have been things that people in this room have walked through and maybe are currently walking through that break your heart. God, it wasn't what you wanted for them. You didn't send it to them as some sort of a test. You didn't decide, oh, they're strong, so I'm going to put this on them. That's not you. That's not you. But you are saying that because you were victimized in some way, because you were mistreated in some way, I can take those beliefs, I can take those thoughts, and I can speak truth to them. I can show you that in your worst moment, I was there to save you. When you were the most scared, I was there to save you. When this happened, I was the one that came through and spared you. I was the one that lifted you up out of that. I was the one that brought the solution. Or I was that presence that you felt every time that thing happened. I was the one that was there to help you endure what you were walking through. God, I know your desire for us was that we would have never known evil. Your desire was for us to just stay in the garden and never know evil. But when evil came, you knew you only wanted it to have a short lifespan. That's why they couldn't stay in the garden. And you had a plan. And your plan was Jesus. And your plan is still Jesus. God, I lift up every amygdala in here that is triggered and traumatized and all lit up because of things that have happened and those truths, those fragmented memories. Father, I pray right now into each mind you would clearly speak, that you would go and you would grab them. And right now you would speak truth to those memories. God, that they would be reprocessed and they would haunt us no more. That we'd see from the place of victory. God, I thank you that that's your promise for us. That's your promise for us. That's our inheritance. So we're going to do this. We're going to go ahead and dismiss, but if the prayer team's willing, If I could have the prayer team come on up. And if you need to practice a little authentic relationship, you need to take a little personal responsibility, you need to say something out loud that has been roaming around in your head and have somebody agree with you and pray with you and help move that over to being filed the way it's supposed to be filed. As Landon said, don't leave this place without getting what you came here for. If you came here for freedom, give freedom. If you didn't, but you need it, come get it. Father, I pray you would keep us aware of the wrong thoughts that we're thinking. You'd help us speak truth to those things. And you'd help us heal. Help us heal. There's healing in this process. Help us heal.